Music from faraway places. Extraordinary music at that. Noel Debien, where are we off to this evening?
Well, if people didn't guess from those overtones, from those that sort of extraordinary whistling sound that the Mongolians can affect when they're doing that thing, they would, if they'd guessed what the music was, they know that we are on our way to Mongolia.
Inner or outer, do we know?
Well, I'm not sure what inner or outer is. I know that it's going to include Ulaanbaatar, and it is going to have some yaks and some steps involved in it. I've got to tell you that, too. The idea being that World Vision actually does run a program in Mongolia, because Mongolia, of course, is post-communist. It's got a democratic government. It's on its way, and the aid agencies are working out how to do that. And I've managed to hook up with Tim Hooper, British-born, but moved to Australia with his wife in the 60s. An Australian citizen, a banker, and he's gone over there to direct the Vision Fund for World Vision. Tim Hooper. I've spoken to some people in some strange places around the world, but I've got to say, Mongolia does take the cake. How did you end up in Mongolia working on microfinance?
I used to work here years ago in 94 to 96 as a consultant. And then I more or less retired, and I saw this advertisement, so I decided to apply. And because I've been in microfinance and financing all my life, got embroiled in running this microfinance organization here.
Ulaanbaatar, describe the city you're working for us, because I've only ever seen Ulaanbaatar on television. What the city is a center of population, as I understand it. Most of the Mongolians actually live in the capital. What's it like as a city?
Well, it's a flat city in a sort of valley with hills all around it. And it's very, very spread out and that sort of thing. You know, it was had about 400,000 people in it, but it's just grown and grown and grown and has enormous sort of Uyghur population around the outside.
Well, we're talking about highly urbanised, highly developed public transport systems, sewage systems.
No, we're not. No. It's grown too fast, and so there are all sorts of problems with transportation and that sort of thing. But it is getting it there eventually, you know.
But I'm right to expect that when you have a traffic jam in Ulaanbaatar, it's not going to be a yak jam, it's going to be a public transport jam.
Yes, yeah, and too many cars jam, yes. That's only twice a day with the rush hour, otherwise it's not too bad.
Our visions, I suppose, of Mongolia are broad, sweeping plains, not much tree cover at all. It's a completely landlocked country, isn't it, too? Completely surrounded by Russia and China. Do you get out into that less developed part of Mongolia as well?
Yeah, we have a few branches in the countryside, which we run through our area development programs in World Vision. And the country outside, it's a rolling plains and very few people and very few roads.
I have to say, when I started researching this, the first thing that popped into my mind when I thought about microfinance in Mongolia was an episode of The Goodies I must have seen 15 years ago, where they'd created this spurious product called yak fat, which was the most unattractive thing. It was like a bar made of yak fat, and it was a joke. But it was a joke about what could you sell, what sort of business could you run in Mongolia. Now, what sort of businesses are you sponsoring in microfinance?
The World Vision have these various development programs all over the country, and we train small groups of people, like community banks or solidarity groups, to get on and try and run a small business. And we lend them small amounts of money for a period of a few months. They repay, and then we lend them again.
What size is a typical loan that you give?
Well, our average is now about $180 US, but we start at $50. They repay after 4 months, and then we give them another one.
So these are relatively small loans by Australian standards?
Yes, very small indeed, yes.
And what sort of default?
don't have any defaults so far.
Seriously, everybody pays back what you lend?
Some are a bit slow in repaying, but generally the repayment rate is very good. Basically, the businesses are things like being a trader in the market, growing vegetables, having a small carpentry shop, a small bakery, making souvenirs, clothes, and things of this nature. In order to get them out of the basic poverty trap of constantly requiring being fed with free food, free this and free everything else, and try and get them going, as it were, in business so they can buy clothes to cover the children, pay for the children to go to school and things of this nature.
When you say free food, are you talking about government handouts and that sort of thing?
Yes, well, not just government handouts, UN handouts and food security.
Well, I'm sort of surprised that Mongolia, which I had imagined was a fairly self-sufficient, even if it was nomadic, is what we see. Some parts of it are nomadic. Mm. Of course, other parts of it are now quite settled.
Well, no, since the collapse of Comecon, with the all these factories and things coming idle, and also the large sort of poor population have around the three large towns, you've got a large section of population who are unemployed and have no basic means of support, really.
You're talking about the collapse of the planned communist economy that was there until, what, 92 or 93, something like that?
Yes, well, it collapsed earlier, but it took till about 92, 93 to have its real effects in Mongolia.
So where was the money to keep that economy coming from? Was that coming in from China and Russia? Was it being supported as part of the bloc?
Yes, it was coming in from China, well, mainly Russia, because Mongolia exported coal and copper and Kashmir and things of this nature to Russia, and in exchange got fed in aid and expertise and machinery and so forth.
So is it one of those areas of the old sort of communist sphere of influence that has been heavily colonised by Russians and Chinese?
It was originally, till the Mongolians decided to become much more independent after the collapse of thing, and therefore become more independent.
So has this meant a return of ethnic Russians and ethnic Chinese home?
Yes, yes, but some have stayed on, of course.
In also looking at this, I noticed that Buddhism is well established, that there's quite, you know, half the country is Buddhist, and by that it's the Tibetan form of Buddhism, the form which is most publicly known, you know, through the Dalai Lama, who's actually just been in Sydney, as a matter of fact. There are a lot of those Buddhists present in the nation.
Yeah, that's right. I think over 60% of the population.
And how much influence does that Lamaism have culturally now?
Quite a lot, but there's a large portion that are atheists who don't have any religion at all, who are under the communist system. So there's a big gap of religious knowledge or religious support as a result.
If you had to describe lifestyle, you know, to a Sydneysider or a Melburnian or a Perth person, what are the contrasts that you noticed when you're there?
Well, first of all, it's very cold in the winter and it's quite hot in the summer. It's dusty. It can be a very frustrating place because you can't get what you want. I think the people are quite strong and resolute and determined to get into the 20th century.
So they're the true descendants of Genghis Khan?
Yes, I suppose. there's a language problem because Mongolian's an archaic language and, you know, people here don't speak French or German or Indonesian or whatever it is. And because it's been landlocked for such a long time, it's in many ways it's quite backward.
So how do you do most of your communication? Are you actually speaking a Mongol language?
Well, no, Mongolian is quite difficult to learn, so we use translators or staff who can speak English. Since 2005, English has been compulsory in the schools, but it'll take another 10 or 15 years to come through the system, as it were, and so you have this problem.
Well, it's a place of extremes, as you mentioned. I read, you know, minus 40 in winter. We're talking really cold winters. And then very hot summers because it's landlocked. We're 30, 35, 40 degrees Celsius in summer as well. What is diet like? I mean, what sort of things would you normally eat?
Well, that is the problem. In the summer, it's okay because vegetables can be grown and you can get produce. In the winter, all the vegetables and produce are brought in from China and they are very expensive. So the poor Mongolians who have no money have a very limited diet.
You're directing something called the Vision Fund, which is connected to World Vision. How does that Vision Fund work?
Well, first of all, Vision Fund is owned by World Vision. It's a microfinance organisation. We have about nearly 50 around the world. We have these groups who we train, who are clients of our World Vision programme, and then we lend them money after we've trained them in business to try and carry on and make some business and progress. We have about just over 50 staff, and we have about 8 branches and about 5 or 6 sub-branches.
So how are you measuring the success of what you do in finance? How do you get to the end of a week or a month and say, we're making progress here?
Well, last year we managed to have about 8,000 customers who we lend money to. And we have no bad debts, and they've all been repaid. The monies have all been repaid in Vision Fund. And we try and increase again, you know, this year and see if we can get to more houses.
Thanks, Tim. Great to talk to you. Thanks for taking our call. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.